You are listening to Type Radio. My name is Paula Scher. Now we're talking.
Type Radio.
If you had to choose, because you're also doing art, fine art.
Yeah.
If you had to choose between your own thing versus working for the clients, what would you do? If you had to do it all over again, would you? Could you consider yourself to be
painting
I'm so divided. I really don't know. I really can't answer that question because I'm actually going through that all the time right now because I'm having another exhibit in November 8th that opens. I had to finish 8 paintings in 2 years, which I had done. They're very large and they're very intense and complicated. And the first time I exhibited, I was doing these more as a side part of my life. Didn't think I would have a show. Didn't think they would sell. Didn't have any thought about it at all. And I did 12 paintings over about 8 years. So to do 8 paintings over 2 years nearly killed me. And so I have to, and I think my design work suffered to a degree. I mean, and so I think about it all the time, and I am truly divided because I think that I like, design is instantaneous. Ideas come very quickly. It can be executed in an amazingly fast manner. Where painting, the way I paint, is exactly the opposite. Very slow, very labor intensive, because of the nature of the way I did that balance. I don't know if I didn't do the design, if the painting would change, because it is this thing that lives together with each other. But I know I would miss both acts, because I like the pace of design, and I like the collaborative part. And I like working with people. I mean, I'm being funny about the clients and the family and the closet and all of that, but I respect my clients. And I enjoy my relationships with them. If I didn't, I couldn't be a designer. Designers, I think, should be inherently social people because you are making things for society. When you're a fine artist, you're making things for yourself. Actually, this is in some ways dirtier business because, you know, the galleries have market concerns and there's the same commercial value in fine art, so there's nothing pure about it. But the act of making it, it tends to be solitary. You're not really responding to anybody. You're in a space by yourself, thinking about your work without some other commentary. And they're very different.
And how did you? When did you start painting, or have you always been painting?
My husband works all the time. We have this house. I'm married to Seymour Quast, and he gets up every day and draws. And he sometimes makes paintings, sometimes he makes metal sculptures. He's always been doing it. And he has a very big studio in our house in Connecticut. And we go up there on weekends, and now 3-day weekends, and which is where I started the serious painting. And he always did this. So I needed something to do. I don't think I consciously made the choice to paint. I think I was sort of, that was the way I was spending my time up there in the winter. In the summer, I gardened and did things outside. In the winter, there weren't a lot of people around. So I started doing this thing. And then I became addicted to it. But I don't know if I would have ever done it if I hadn't been in a marriage.
And are the paintings always, used by the typographic?
Yeah, well, I only know how to draw. I don't draw very well. I make letter forms. No, it was funny when I was first began designing record covers. It's back in the days with no technology, and so the way you made a record cover is you got a C print of artwork. C print is a photographic print.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a photograph or an illustration, and my record covers were always bleed because I liked that 12 surface. I never made borders. So the typography would always integrate into the art. And the way I would integrate in the art to see what it would look like was I would take a piece of clear acetate that was prepared and designer gouache, a little brush, and I would paint the typography on top of the art until I liked the way it looked. And then that would be the record cover. And then I would set the type in the type house and then make the tassel and then go out to print. But the things people approved were actually my hand-painted comps. So if it was Bodoni, I'd hand paint. If it was, they were bad, kind of bad comping.
But you know, there were. I remember there was this. I think it was when I was at Atlantic Records. I did this Charles Mingus cover, and there was a hand painted comp. And then the finish was done. It was all perfect. And I remember this manager saying to me, "God, I like the hand painted stuff better. It really looks like art." And then all of a sudden, it looks like commercial art. It like moved from one to the other. And this was, you know, in the early 70s. And I would have never produced from a hand painted comp in those days because they were. But I always felt that there was this something soulful about the way about painting that typography. And the maps are just using type as texture, and I'm painting with typography. But and my particular palette is all caps.
All caps. Why all caps? Is that easy?
I'm willing to paint lowercase.
Do you have a favorite letter?
So it's like a cleaner line.
Yeah, you can't curve it as well. Like you make curves and lowercase.
It sounds like stuff sticking out.
But even when I design, I use a lot of all caps. I don't know why. Massimo Vignelli once told me I use all caps because I'm short. This is like my delusion.
Do you have a favorite letter?
That's a tough one. There are things I really like to paint, and there are things I don't like to paint. Like, you know, an E and H and an S are a lot of fun. I don't like to paint M's and W's. They always get too wide or too narrow. It's really impossible.
And you have a favorite typeface?
Oh, they change. I mean, you know, in terms of the design work, there are lots of favorites. I like all things in time. I mean, they're typefaces I've always hated. They're specific. Like I've always hated Optima because I didn't like the idea that it tried to be a serif and a sans serif at the same time. I thought, make up your mind, you know.
Sort of in between.
It's okay, you know. Yeah. Sort of like a middle-of-the-road politician. I always thought that was a wimpy face. But mostly I don't have... I don't think that there are inherently bad typefaces. Those are faces I like more than others. Let's say.
You've... the Monocle magazine, I think there was this one-page or one-and-a-half-page article of the branding, rebranding the United States.
Oh, in Monocle. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that also like something of a personal need to express that political view?
Well, it's an interesting question. I was asked to write a piece on branding for Monocle magazine, and it seemed like a kind of a jokey thing. And they asked me to pick the best brand and the worst brand first. And the best brand, I think I picked Italy because I like Italian food or whatever reason. It was like actually not that carefully thought out. And the worst brand I did the United States because I've been so frustrated with the current administration for two terms. I've been very vocal about it. You know, I was nominated for the National Design Award and turned down going to the White House twice and wrote a letter to Laura Bush. And you know, I've been public about it because I think we should. This is an awful administration. And fortunately, it's going to be over soon. But I think that I'm a citizen, and you know, I speak out when I speak out. The piece I wrote for Monocle was actually extended from that. What started out as more, I would say, flippy. What I did is I wrote pretty. I was proud of what I had done in a funny way because I wrote actually a political piece in branding speak, which I thought was amusing. I was sort of wondering if we could actually do that. I wondered if anybody would pay attention to it because it seems that so often people will take marketing advice over maybe what's right or wrong or over moral advice. So my feeling is, all right, let's write some morality as branding speak and see how it plays out. And I actually liked how beautifully I could actually, you know, because you would have, if you were designing an identity and rehauling an image of a corporation, you would address the name. You would address the symbols. You would address the palette of things that communicate it. You could do that with the United States. It sounds like a completely superficial brush, and I certainly know that. So I hope nobody takes me literally seriously about these things actually changing the soul of a place. But I think that in terms of our image, we do have to change our rhetoric, which is outrageous. It's been outrageous. I don't remember that form of rhetoric in my lifetime before.
But it will soon. I mean, in
it'll in change. A year's time.
Right? It's going to change. I mean, I think the American people are fed up and embarrassed. I think that you know, there's been no interest in being so belligerent. We all know the Iraq War is a disaster. You know, it has to change. The question is, change to what, and how we extricate ourselves from this mess we made. I don't have the answer to that.
But don't you get weary of sort of defending yourself or your country, or like sort of tired of like? But it's getting to the point where it's really embarrassing to be a United States citizen in other parts of the world. It's really.
Well, I think right now it is more than I've ever experienced. But I think that there's a certain amount. I mean, we are now the biggest world power. It used to be there were two powers that were, you know, so that you were, and that's what I mean, I was serious in the article, or I think it was in the interview with Tyler. I don't know if you saw the interview on the web radio, on his website that he did with me. Tyler Brûlé interviewed me, and it had much more.
Have you just seen the one in the
print? The little print priest in the web show. It's more extensive, and it really, I think that you know, when we were in a standoff with the Soviet Union, you know, there was swagger because there were these two, and now that went away. So that you have to stop swaggering because you really have to change your style, and I think that you know, I. While there are a lot of flaws in his presidency, I think that the tone was right in the Clintonian years. You know, I mean, I think that he had the right tonality and was appropriate in the way he would address the world. Where I think that Bush's language and separate from his policies, which I also have problems, but I think that it just in pure tonality. I mean, if you get on the radio and you call three countries, whoever they are, the axis of evil, the likelihood is they'll arm. Yeah. You know, I just don't think it's very smart. It's not because they're going to feel threatened by that kind of a bully call. And I think there are smarter ways to address those kinds of issues. I think he's actually bad for our security. I think he's made us more insecure. If that was the notion or the goal of everything he did, to make a quote unquote more secure America, he is a terrible failure. He made the world a more dangerous place, and that's what's really ultimately bad about it. On the other hand, if you are a world power, just like if you are successful, then people have to take snipes at you. I mean. I think that's human nature.
It also calls for some kind of responsibility for the rest of the world.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I think our policy on global warming is just embarrassing. I mean, just like, how can we be so, you know, the idea. And here's the thing that got me about his statements about, you know, not taking an earlier stand on global warming because these developing nations hadn't, so why would we be the only? Well, the point is they're developing nations. We're way ahead of that. We're supposed to be in the secure position to do these things. What he's admitting is that we're scared of China and India. Well, we can't be that. I mean, if we're such a strong nation, why would we be scared that they're polluting? They should be scared that we're not polluting. That, oops, they're doing something wrong, not the other way around. It seems idiotic. That's like a baby approach to globalism.
Have you taken further action? I mean, with
I do what
design.
I can. I do it.
Would you refuse a client? You would refuse a client.
Oh,
for example?
We do that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, there are things we just won't do.
Yeah.
And there are businesses that we won't work with. There are political causes we won't go near. I mean, there are things like that. But yeah. I have to say that it's not an everyday occurrence. I actually like I said, I like most of my clients and respect what they do.
But do you also take action and make posters that you would put up?
I do, but I don't consider that taking action. I mean, I think that's designers think that they're doing something, and I just think that's... No, I think the way to take action is to support a cause with as much money as you can give and to write letters and make that kind of protest. I think a poster is nice, but every designer wants to make a political poster.
In some sort of means, you know.
I mean, it's you know, you do what you can,
yeah.
And I think that, I think that it's nice, but I don't think that does anything. I mean, to me, that's not taking action. To me, that's making a poster.
Okay.
You're a typical New York designer.
I don't know how many of you talk to. I guess I'm typical. Sort of. I think that...
Could you put your finger on what's...
I think that New York is a city where you're bombarded by media, and there isn't a lot of space, and there's a brashness to it because there isn't a lot of time. So you're always sort of speeding up time, doing things quickly, being a little curt, being a little abrupt. But I think that there's also sarcasm and humor in it, and a certain kind of, I would say, jaded optimism. So I guess that's me.
And your work, do you think that reflects?
I think it's definitely reflected in my work. I think that you know, one reflects themselves in their work, and that's who I am. So.
Could you see yourself living and working in another city than New York?
I really would like to sometime, because I'd hate to go through my whole life with sort of this one experience, but honestly, no. I really have to say that no matter where I am in the world, when I fly into JFK after I've landed and I see the skyline from the Long Island Expressway, I really... you know, my heart is, you know, really full from it. And, you know, when 9/11 happened, you know, our buildings were taken down, it was really, for all New York, it was really emotional. It wasn't about the United States being attacked. It was New York City. You know, it's like, what are you, and the response was, you know, everybody wanted peace. I mean, that was the sort of the overall, you know, expression of peace in every park and every place. But like our sense of the love for the city, you know, we all thought those buildings were ugly, but those were our ugly buildings that, you know, it was like New Yorkers' ugly buildings that came down. And it was like all part of the fabric of the thing you love. You know, it's a great city.
I was
born in Washington, D.C. My father was a map maker. He worked for the Geological Survey. He was a photogrammetric engineer.
And is that, do you think he's the influence to you?
The maps. And, yeah. You know, I grew up with maps all over the house, so there was an attitude about it. But the New York, Washington never felt right. New York always felt right. New York felt right from the time I moved there in 1970. I knew I was home. There was just something about the tempo and the pace, the anonymity, and the media. It's all of it coming at once. It's great.
I have one question about the business templates you did for HP.
Uh-huh.
Don't you think like it will put like some young aspiring designer out of business?
Absolutely not. No, I think that's ridiculous. I think I may have to answer it too. I was waiting to see how bad the response to it would be, and it wasn't at first, and now it seems like it's building. The HP templates, I was very careful about this when I agreed to do it. The HP templates do not compete with graphic designers. They compete with Kinko's. Do you know what Kinko's is? There has been always in the people that are going to use these templates, because you can't, they don't make stationery. It's printed out on your printer on a piece of paper. It's the same people who might, and by the way, the return address on the envelope is a sticker. You know, the sticker goes on, because you can't print an envelope in a printer. So it's not real stationery that's going to the printer. It's an internal system for a guy who's got an accounting business on the side of his house. And he would never hire a graphic designer. He would go to Kinko's, or he would go, if he wanted fancy stationery, he'd go to Tiffany's and have it engraved. But he would never do this. Some of them, those guys, mostly what they do is they go to these, you know, quick printout places to either get to have their typeface or loaded, or they'll get a Microsoft word processing system, and they'll get some kind of dumb typeface on it. You know, it'll be like, you know, cartoon something or other, and they'll print the stuff out and they'll write a letter to a corporation about some kind of business that they're going to do, and they're going to look like, you know, they're just going to look like fools. What the HP stuff does, and it was actually not easy to do, even though the templates are really flat, is that there are five of them, and there are only two that have come out so far because they haven't gotten the software up. The templates were organized into sort of personality decisions. So if you let's say you're selling, a catering business, that you might pick the warm, friendly typeface that's all lowercase. Or if you're a in some kind of home decorating mode, and you're selling, I don't know, if you think you're selling modern Tupperware, you might pick the one that's Helvetica in all caps. And that what they were designed to do was allow somebody who would never afford a designer, wouldn't be able to pay a designer, nor would a designer want to work with, be able to look quasi-professional when they printed the stuff out on their home. And they actually work. I mean, if you try them, they're not custom by any means. They're only five. So how could anybody who had a serious business pick up a cheap template and use it? But what I did save designers from is favors for their brothers-in-law, because that's exactly what this thing is. And if a designer really thinks if you go in and look at those templates and tell me if you really think that I've taken a business, serious business, away from graphic designers, if a designer thinks that, I feel very sorry for them, because that is not design business. That is Kinko's, and I'm very happy to take Kinko's' business away from them. That's number one. The second thing about it is that when you, like Martha Stewart, when you make something inexpensive, reasonably well designed, which those things are, they're anonymous. They're not, this is not personalized design. All over the video, I say, if you want something custom, you have to hire a graphic designer. That thing is disclaimed from top to bottom. I know because I did the interview. If the person that goes to Kinko's and got three, non-matching typefaces on his computer screen, and he downloads them and they look like garbage and he sends them to the corporation, if he starts looking at a template where there's consistency in typography and the thing is ordered, that person begins to understand and recognize that something is better designed than something else that will then look sloppy to him. That's good for all of us, because that elevates, especially in the United States, that elevates the expectation of what something should be. That is, I believe in that so much. That's why I took the project, because your goal as a designer is to elevate, not the high level where they're already erudite and they already understand what good design is, but the person that's going to Kinko's to get the thing off the rack, and that's the victory of it. So that's who's using it. It's not now yet. Will somebody
is that checked? Like who downloads them? Are they like
what business? What reputable business of more than one person would download a letterhead from a thing as their permanent letterhead? You go to the printer and you have that stuff printed. You have letterheads in your house. You don't put a sticker on your envelope if you're in a real business. This is a guy.
Oh, the Dutch maybe would.
The Dutch people do. That's what we do.
Real businesses do that?
Well,
a corporation?
I can't imagine them Dutch companies like saving money to just
get
the Polisher one. We can even say, like, polisher, design our stationery.
Well, it'll work for 10 minutes. After that, you'd look like a fool, because what if everybody had them? There are only five. There are only five typefaces. They don't look different. You're going to be able to tell. I mean, if you actually think they do that, you're going to be able to tell in 5 minutes. It's a joke. I mean, you can't do that. They would really put a major organization, somebody who would actually hire a designer, would stick a sticker on their envelope. That they would. What I'm trying to tell you is, if they're putting a sticker on their envelope, they're never going to hire a designer. Because if you would do that, you do it the right way.
Well, there is this, in general, the motive is always saving money. Like, we're not going to spend it on the graphic design. That's always the motive. But it's like,
yeah, but if they're not going if that's the motive, why would you want them as a client?
Of course, but it's like, I'm talking from their point of view. And the thing is, like, these companies always say, we have this nephew with the computer, but also, like, it's sort of diminutive towards the whole graphic
industry. Yeah, but that's always existed. It existed, and when I was starting to work, before there was the computer, it was the printer. There was always a printer who could, they would throw in the design, like, who gave them the printing, because there weren't other printers, they'd throw in the design with it, and you would say, oh, well, they can go to the... But the thing is that's not your client. That's the point. And there isn't... And designers who think that, oh, we're little, we need those clients. No, you don't. Those aren't the people to work with, because
they're not going to get you anywhere. The guys that went to the printer were always bad clients, and you just didn't use them or work with them. And what they would do is there would always be somebody who would filter into the organization and say, no, we can't do that this way. I cannot imagine, really, that anybody who didn't have anything but a side business would use those templates. If you're a graphic designer, you are not Kinko's. So the idea that you're putting yourself in a position to compete with Kinko's, because that's who you're competing with for those jobs, that's crazy. That's absolutely, you can't do that. You can't be in business that way. And you can't look there for it. But if you're going to publish it and you're asking the question, that's the answer. I mean, it wasn't, and I absolutely would defend it 100%. If you go in and you look at them and you see what they are, and they were actually hard to, as I said, they were hard to do. Because it's hard to take something to to make it look professional at the same time with anonymity. And if you actually type your name in them, they're persuasive. They look like if you're a schlepper in your room doing a small business, it makes you look a little more professional than if you went to Kinko's, you know. But people will buy stupid paper and they'll probably not use it right. You know, I mean, it's never gonna. You have to know that. I mean, it's
what I've also read is like it surprised some people that you used Helvetica as one of the.
No, well, I'll tell you why I used Helvetica. I know that was a
because you said it was sort of responsible for the Iraq and Vietnam War in the film Helvetica film.
Well, I don't dislike Helvetica formalistically. Beginning in design, it was the typeface of big corporations. I used Helvetica. If you want to really know why I used Helvetica, I'll tell you. What happened was I picked four fonts, and they all came from different foundries. And I didn't use Helvetica. I used Gotham, and it was Jonathan Heffler's. And HP wanted a purchase for him, and he was afraid that people were going to hack into the site, like designers. Mm-hmm. Talk about cheap. We're going to hack into the HP site and steal the font, and he wouldn't make enough money on it. So we had to cut a deal with Adobe, and Adobe would sell all the things, and it had to be one deal. And Jonathan actually, he could have taken the deal. I would have given all four of the fonts, but he didn't think he thought he'd do better by keep, because he says his biggest moneymaker is Gotham. So he didn't want to put it on the site, which is fair enough, because he's probably right. The designers probably would have hacked into it. So I went to Adobe, and I was looking for specific weight. Because it was Gotham Light was the modern, so that we went through everything in the best way we could find was Helvetica. So it was a secondary choice, and it was really about the philosophy of being able to get that kind of big name and light type, because the look was a specific way. And I thought that within these four generic designs, because they were really, as I said, they're basically very, very generic, but you can recognize, when you look at the fonts together, you can actually recognize personality differences. So it sort of teaches somebody who never looked at typography before how you actually, oh gee, that type has little feet and it's sort of rounder and this one's tall and thin, and that you see that there's a difference between them, because most people don't know how to look at typography. That's why there's Kinko's. So that part of me saw it as more educational. If you look at it, it's actually a primer on how to make a type choice and see the differential. And even on that you can also see layout differential. But they're, other than that, they're really, really, really generic. And that's what the problem was. So anyway, I thought it was an interesting process. And I'm sorry it's seen that way, but I just think that in this instance, I really think the designers are nuts. I mean, I think this is threatening their livelihoods. This is really a sad state of affairs. I'm sorry. I mean, it's the kind of thing my brother, who is an engineer, would who drives out of his way 70,000 miles to get cheaper gas. It's the kind of thing that he would use. And believe me, he's not going to hire a graphic designer if it isn't there. I promise you.
Have you ever designed a typeface?
No. I designed a typeface for... I have had typefaces I've designed as logos turned into fonts, but not things that other people use.
Last question?
More
question? How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, don't remember me at all. I don't know. I I don't think I've figured out I don't think I've done my best work yet, so You know, I can't answer the question. I mean, I would like to be remembered for my best work.
Which is still yet to come.
Which is still yet to come.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Type radio.